So it is a bolus. So our classic bolus that we're using on commercial dairies is rumination activity. So everything you can do with an external monitor, but then the magic happens with that internal temperature monitoring to an accuracy of 0.018 degrees Fahrenheit. It's just really neat. Not only the ability to catch cows with an immune challenge early, so a fever or a metabolic issue up or down on temperature, but also then that ability to diagnose.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Mycotoxins can threaten feed and cattle performance. DSM Firmenich offers a portfolio of solutions to help mitigate the impact of mycotoxins in your feed.
With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of SmartAmine M and MilkPay.com.
Hello, welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. Today, I'm happy to welcome to the show another Michigan resident, Brian Sanford, who runs the U.S. East team for the company SmaxTech. Brian, thanks for joining today.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about your background. Are you a Michigan native originally?
Yeah, so grew up with dairy on both sides of the family, small dairies. My grandfather on my mom's side actually had a parlor in Freestalls in the 60s and 70s, which as growing up as a kid, I didn't know was a big deal until I got back into the dairy industry and realized how far ahead he was. So always been interested in pushing and excited about the dairy industry, and then worked on the nutrition side for about 15 years before making the move to SmaxTech.
Okay. So you said got back into the dairy industry. So did you work in another sector for a while?
Yeah. So I was a real estate on the real estate side for about 10 years, kind of built some of those sales skills and didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up. And after missing it for a while and realizing that wanting to go back to the dairy, I made that 32, made that change.
And you did nutrition mostly in Michigan, or who did you work with?
Mostly in Michigan with AgriKing.
Okay.
And then focused on forage quality, forage treatment, and managed the team here for 8 years as well.
Good deal. So what has it been like? It's kind of a very different aspect of dairy, right? But your connections and stuff are all, of course, useful. But what's it been like working in the technology side now?
Not dramatically different. I mean, the biggest thing is probably just the direct focus on health and repro.
Okay, yep.
On the nutrition side and the forage quality side, that's the direction everyone's headed is health and repro, longevity. But right. On the sensor side, it really amplifies that. So, I was watching sensors all the way along. About 7 or 8 years ago, my son and I took a trip to University of Kentucky, met with one of Bewley's research assistants. He was working on a junior high prepared FFA speech, and they had some boluses in cows. And I can remember stopping at the end of the driveway and going, man, if somebody really figures that out, because at the time, the communication kind of sucked and the battery life wasn't very good, but I'm like, man, if somebody can really figure that out, this could be a lot of fun.
Maximize profitability and herd health with early detection in animal health, reproduction, and feeding. The most advanced bolus technology and professional support from agricultural experts make this possible with SmaxTech, the health management system that future-proofs your dairy operation.
And I guess I kind of skipped over, maybe not everybody listening is familiar with SmaxTech. Maybe we should stop and talk about how old is this company? What's the products? What's the purpose of the company?
So SmaxTech is an Austrian company, been in existence about 15 years.
Okay.
It was actually a school research project is where it started. And then kind of evolved from there, started in the research space, primarily around pH monitoring. And then along the process figured out that was important to that pH. Once we had temperature, starting to beginning to see what was available information wise on health of cows, and then went direct to market about 5 years ago. Our largest market right now is Germany, being right next to Austria, and we're still on the small side. But at this point, we're over 500,000 cows on monitoring, so we're starting to we're starting to sneak up there and knock on the door of a little bit bigger monitoring company.
Maybe people picked up on this when you mentioned pH monitoring, but of course, one of the unique things about this sensor is where it goes in the animal. So talk me through that.
Yeah, so it is a bolus. So our classic bolus that we're using on commercial dairies is rumination, activity. So everything you can do with an external monitor. But then the really the magic happens with that internal temperature monitoring to an accuracy of 0.018 degrees Fahrenheit. It's just really neat. Not only the ability to catch cows with an immune challenge early, so a fever or a metabolic issue up or down on temperature, but also then that ability to diagnose. So we're able to see the difference between, say, a mastitis and a pneumonia. So not only do you know it's a fever, but you're able to go cow side and have an idea of what's going on as you're making.
Wow.
And to give you an idea, one of the things I always go back to show level of accuracy. So we actually have a calving detection. And some farms think it's great. Some farms, they're 24-hour staff. Calving detection is not a huge deal to them.
Right.
Level of accuracy, when that calving alert comes, it's about 0.8 of a degree drop in temperature that gives us that 15 to 20 hour calving window. So that's just a really neat way to show how accurate the sensor is and how accurate the algorithms and the software are in deciphering that information.
So is that calving alert reliable enough that some people are relying on it to move into the calving pen, like for just in time?
Yeah, for just in time. A lot of customers are using that. The one thing is at 15 to 20 hours, sometimes it's a little sooner than customers want. So at that point, if you want to you might just tail paint those cows. So as you're walking, you can take a little bit closer look at those cows. And then the one thing that it's probably most important on is that cow that has that metabolic change, that drop in temperature, but she doesn't have a calf within 24 hours. That gives us some indication that something's not quite right.
Interesting. So I guess, you know, having done rectal temps on lots of cows, I mean, one question when I first heard about this, one question I had would be, well, there's probably a full degree difference in baseline temps between cows as a starting point. That was an initial concern. How does this sensor deal with that?
Right. You're going to be right around average cow temperature is going to be right around 103 at the reticular temperature.
Okay.
So it is going to be obviously hotter than you're used to seeing. The one thing is, once you get to using the system, you don't really tend to pay much attention to what the actual temperature is. It's more about the temperature behavior. So you've got her 5-day average, and then what is that 8 or 10 hour temperature spike on a subclinical mastitis? You know, what has that temperature behavior been like? That that temperature spike on subclinical mastitis was one thing that really surprised me as to how quickly that temperature dissipates. I mean, it comes on quick, it goes away quick. Yep. And it really shows why so many farms have gone away from daily temp checks, because even if you're on the right day, it's about a 1 in 3 chance that you put the thermometer in her at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've done controlled experiments with continuous temperature monitoring, and you're absolutely right. We can spike to 104 degrees or higher, and they're back to baseline within 10 hours in many cases. So another question, and this especially bothered me when I first heard this idea, is that, well, some of the heat, like in the gut, is actually coming from microbial fermentation, right? Is that it's not actually animal produced heat necessarily. And then, so that's one piece that concerned me about the reliability of this. And then the other is, of course, when cows drink, especially in the winter, right, you're getting a shock of cold water, that's going to probably change the temp. So how do those things affect these measurements?
I don't see any dramatic shift in the amount of heat that's coming from the microbial protein. We see, you know, and I would think that would change based on diets. Cows at the reticulum must manage that pretty well, because I don't see much variance from herd to herd. It doesn't matter if we've got herds on pasture in New Zealand that are 100%, you know, 85% pasture, and we've got herds that are in California that are very high concentrate diets, and I don't see much temperature difference. So I don't think microbial protein affects that from cow to cow very much. Okay. Water is a little bit more of a challenge. And I think that's, I haven't dug into this with our developers over time, but I think that's a big part of what we've worked our way through is trying to find what is her average temperature minus the water intake. Now the neat part about that water intake is you could see those drinking cycles. So especially on a fresh cow, if you had a cow that's a little bit of a challenge, a customer told me a couple years ago, one of my early customers, hey, I spent more time in the field this year than I ever have, because she'd treat a fresh cow in the morning. Her normal routine would have been to come back and check 3 or 4 hours to see how she was doing. She was able to go out, do field work, pull it up on her phone and say, hey, she's been up and drank 3 times since I treated her this morning. No need to go see her again. So for fresh cows, the ability to see that drinking cycle. And then the other piece is just in the last year, we've developed the algorithm to estimate daily water intake. So providing that to you either in liters or gallons, depending on what you follow on a day-to-day basis, but to get that water intake, and it's within single digit accuracy. And me being a farm kid, I'm a little bit more practical what I'm looking at. Dry cows, we see 18 to 22 gallons of water intake pretty consistently. I don't ever see a cow that's really cranking on milk drinking less than 35 to 40 gallons of water. So I think it's just from a watching it and a practical standpoint, it seems pretty darn close.
The other thing, it's really easy to envision how this could be perhaps the most accurate way to measure rumination, right? Because it's right there where the gut's contracting, but maybe a little harder to envision, you know, how something that's in the gut that's contracting and moving could also sense cow activity, like walking and particularly for like heat detection. So how accurate is it at that?
I mean, we use a 3D accelerometer just like any other device on the market, but it sits in that reticulum. The SmackStack algorithm actually knows the angle in which it sits at. So it's laying in the reticulum at the right angle. So one, it won't give you rumination if it happens to get stuck in the rumen mat on installation. It knows if it's sitting at the right angle, so it won't report bad rumination data. And then that rumination is figured off of the reticular contractions. And as you know, there's particular patterns of reticular contractions depending on where that cow is in her eating and chewing her cud. So it's actually using those. So I don't want to take anything away from external devices. They're a big part of the reason I'm here. They do a great job. If we're tooting our own horn, there is definitely some advantage to being on the inside and that having that reticular contraction to be able to monitor specifically. Then flipping over to the activity, because it sits in that spot, it actually is a pretty darn good, when you think about either being on the neck with a collar or on the ear with an ear tag, I think sitting in that reticulum probably is the most stable still spot to sit. We all know you can predict heat, you can predict estrus with a collar or an ear tag very, very consistently, but that's we're sitting in a really good spot. It seems, I think people think of it as a floating around the rumen, but it actually sits down in that reticulum in a fairly lodged in still spot. So
okay.
With heat detection, it's a pretty easy one for us to match what everything else that's on the market as well.
Well, I have some practical questions, and some of this, I don't know if it's all like, you know, if you have research to back up exactly, here's what you should do. But I, with 500,000 cows on this, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of experience coming back that you guys hear. Do you see people doing different treatment protocols because this is giving them temperature changes before maybe clinical signs show up? Is it changing how people intervene?
The first piece is you have to bring people along. When you send the treatment team out, or if on a smaller dairy where the owner's doing the treatment, the first comment is there's nothing wrong with that cow.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it does take, hey, that cow had a temperature today. She had a temperature again, 2-3 days ago, you know, so it's 2 or 3 temperature spikes. And then all of a sudden she's got clinical mastitis. And sometimes it takes seeing that process to believe that fever has, you know, and one of the things that we fight, and it was very early on here in the US market, is, well, she'll self-cure. And she does, But as you know, and a lot of the research shows, it takes a ton of energy. If I've got my numbers right, I think it takes about 60 pounds of the glucose it takes for that immune response is the equivalent of about 60 pounds of milk. So if you think if she gets hit with an immune response three times in 1 week, the kind of energy that that takes. So we do have a lot of customers doing a number of different protocols on these subclinical cows. Very few of which have anything to do with antibiotics. They're all nutraceuticals, probiotic yeast, a bunch. The thing we're seeing, there's a lot of good products on the market. It doesn't seem to matter as much what the product is, as it's more about when. And if we can get supportive care to those cows and give those cows a little bit of push, and the biggest thing is getting them eating and drinking. When they do that, then they have the ability to push through, and we see. And where that comes in for the dairy, what we've consistently seen is reduced involuntary cull rates. One of the dairies that I know you've been on has had significant involuntary cull rates. And this was, and even in healthy herds, herds that have low somatic cell counts, that have really good managements, those are the ones that we get the quickest and biggest results, because the pieces are already in place. They already know what they're doing. They've already got great cow people. This just gives them one more tool in the toolbox. I think about it like with this analogy. If you give a really good mechanic a really good set of tools versus giving an 18-year-old kid that just started fiddling with engines a really good set of tools, they're going to be able to do two totally different things. So you give that really good cow person a really good tool. And so then reduction of involuntary cull rate, really able to attack milk quality. So if there's a little, especially on these herds that milk quality is just a little bit of a struggle, maybe 150 to 200, being able to grab those cows subclinically and get them some support and push them through and reduce clinical mastitis. The hardest one I think to find is those subclinicals that never go clinical, the ones that just hang around. They end up being that cow that 40, 50, 60 days down the road, she's lost 40 or 50 pounds. And then all of a sudden she's on a truck with no clinical diagnosis. That's the cow that excites me. Whether it's subclinical ketosis or subclinical mastitis, those two are pretty easy to solve with a number of different, fairly cheap treatment options. And then we could keep those cows on the farm. And that's a big part of where I see involuntary cull rate. On the fresh cow side, the ability to diagnose, if we're 4 or 5 days in, if we know rumination's off, that's not a real great indicator, because a lot of cows at 4 or 5 days in, rumination hasn't fully recovered. But to see, is she running a fever or is she still down in temperature? And now we can really have a lot more of a rifle approach as to how we're going to help that cow and keep her moving forward. So I kind of wandered around on that answer, but does that get us down? I guess the last one is peak milk. So really being able to find those laggers, whether it's from subclinical mastitis, subclinical ketosis, whether it's an early hoof infection, respiratory is one that we're able to catch before she loses any milk or drops in rumination. And that's the thing to remember on all of these with a high cow, we're going to catch them with a temperature, but 2 to 3 days before rumination drops in. And in some cases, rumination never drops. So the ability to help these cows and move them along, but those peak milks, not because we raise peak milks higher, but because we're able to pull that bottom up and grab those cows that are lagging around on the bottom. Peak milks on the herds we've had milk weights on, we've been able to push those up significantly.
One thing I never thought about before, but if you're catching cows a couple days before clinical signs of mastitis, typically by the time cows are showing clinical signs, they're already getting sort of reduction in CFUs, right? The actual pathogen is getting knocked down. So usually if they're going to spread pathogen, it's before we actually see signs. So I never thought about this before, but do you have farms with hospital pens where they're chucking cows over there much quicker? And is that potentially helping reduce mastitis pathogen spread?
The biggest thing is we tend to see a reduction in cows going to the hospital pen if we're able to support them outside.
Okay.
The one that I haven't had anyone do yet that's curious, that I have some curiosity for, is if she has a fever, especially on these herds that are large enough that pen moves don't seem to make a difference from a social standpoint.
Yep.
I wonder if rather than giving her a nutritional bolus, some sort of nutritional treatment boluses, could we slide her out over and just feed her a different diet for 3 or 4 days? We haven't done that. My question back to you is, does that make that pathogen load shared to other cows better or worse? I don't know what the answer to that is.
Yeah. There's so many questions you could try to tackle research.
But I think we see so many of these cows when we give them some support, we don't see that fever bounce back. So I would assume we're just seeing a lower pathogen load all the way through.
Okay.
And then it makes me think of our low somatic cell count herds. I think one of the reasons they have a hard time cleaning up these subclinical cows is they're never getting enough pressure to fully break with clinical mastitis.
Yeah.
You know, they're not getting exposed to a lot. So they only get a little bit, and then they're subclinical.
They're not truly triggering an immune response, right?
Yeah, so. it's just this fever, and then they never go full blown clinical. So that's part of why I think some of our really healthy herds have this gives them such an advantage, because they can find those cows that just need, you know, you think about a really strong, you know, high level athlete. If they've got a little bit of a nagging injury or a little bit of a nagging issue, if they can't communicate that to their trainer and they can't make adjustments and do things to get that fixed, it's just going to continue to haunt them and get worse and worse and worse, even if it's not to the point where it debilitates them, but it may make it so they can't run that best race or run that PR in the race that they're running. I think the same thing happens with cows. We've got these high level cows. They're really pushing. At this point, we're not looking for broken cows. We're not looking for a cow that's wrecked. We're looking for a cow. Can we push her another 10 or 15 pounds of peak milk? And where can we find those little things that are bugging her and help her along? So,
yep, absolutely.
We can find broken cows too, but it's a lot more fun if we can get to them earlier.
Frankly, if you can't avoid a whole ton of broken cows, you're probably not in the business anymore at this point, right?
Yeah, a lot of that has been moved on. It's amazing the dairy managers and the treatment teams, you know, how good they are in the dairy world at this point.
So you kind of alluded to some of the farms where you think this is having a big impact. Are there, talk about that question broadly. Do you think there's other types of particular farms that really benefit the most?
Yeah, we've got a huge range. We've had herds that have been higher cull rates, more of a, you know, hopefully this isn't offensive to California. I think it is a California style dairy where you move cows through. That's almost become a thing of the past because of heifer costs at this point. So being able to bring those sold and dieds under 60 down significantly on farms that have those struggles. I do always point out, just like any system, it's not a magic bullet.
Yeah.
It gives you information and then you have to make decisions. You have to work with your veterinarian and your nutritionist. Our team, we have a customer success team that is a big part of the process on onboarding on farm, whether it's in English or Spanish, working through with the producer and with the treatment teams. What are we going to do for protocols? How are we going to get these cows some support, and then how do we move them through? But on the results, you know, what on different herds, and then, you know, more herds that want to be aggressive on milk production, herds that keep cull rates similar, but then are able just to pull milk production and peak milks up. That's always an option. We've got a herd in Wisconsin that just blows my mind. Their death loss is, I won't even say it out loud because you wouldn't believe me. It's unbelievably low. And they were still, I mean, that and cull, overall cull rates low, but they were still able to, then they're able to push peak milk production and milk production because they're just finding those little things on cows that were already in really good shape, but just needed a little bit of help and needed, that cow needed somebody to tell their story as to what their aches and pains were and what their challenge was.
That's really cool. I know this is a general question for any sensor-based system, but it's I mean, controversial across different people. You get very different views. What are you seeing in terms of people shifting to less synchronization and more natural heat breeding with your system?
One of the things in the sales process for us, health is number one. Mm-hmm. The way we're structured and the cost, we're going to focus on health first. With that said, our repro side and heat detection side is really good. I'll put it against anybody. But what we're seeing is, hey, let's spend time and clean up the health side first, then and see what results we can get from that. And then most of the customers, when they come on board, we keep their repro protocols in place. That we do have a few that want to switch over and breed off of natural heats right away. I would say a majority of our customers are doing some sort of synchronization on first service and then using the sensor for repeat heats. We've got customers all the way across the board. I think like other sensors, some that obviously organic customers that are 100% off of natural heats, all the way to customers that still are 100% off of protocols. My biggest focus is if we could keep more cows in the herd, we can have more pregnancies. So if we can find those subclinical cows that keep and give them some support and keep those early lactation calls down, early to mid lactation calls down, we can have more pregnancies. So that would be the place on the repro side that I get the most excited about.
Discover Schooler's flexible and reliable dairy feed ingredient solutions to help support your herd's growth and well-being. Schooler is a trusted partner in dairy feed solutions, delivering high-quality feed ingredients when and where you need them. Discover an extensive portfolio of product options to fit your unique rations and cost parameters. Learn more at schooler.com/dairy. That's schooler.com/dairy.
I guess looking towards the future, are there, to the extent that you can share, are there sort of additional features that are in the R&D pipeline or available now?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One that just came out is our assistant feature that has the ability to break up all the alerts by pen, by farm. So if you're multi-site, by farm, by alert, by treatment team. So for example, if you're going to attack subclinical ketosis in the 20 to 40 day cows, and we really want to push milk production, if we've got a team that's just doing some treatment on those cows, we can have low temperature alerts 20 to 40 days for pen 39. So really awesome to be able to split those out, workload, who's got what list, where are they going? We can have some more of the severe things left to more of a high level herd manager, and some more of the simple things that can be a little bit more for somebody that's working their way up in the treatment team. Yeah. Some things that are coming, we're in constant development. We've got over 50 people on the programming and development side. And my apologies to the SmackStack people, I probably used the wrong words, but we've got a huge team. It was very evident to me when I first went to the home office. I work for a technology company that happens to be in the dairy business. we're not a dairy company that happens to be in the technology business. So we were actually just, it's been announced, but not closed, but we were acquired by an investment firm, KKR, which is going to bring a chunk of initial investment. And I'm excited to, or a chunk of the next investment. I'm excited to see what'll be next. There's a lot of things already in the pipeline. Most of that's around herd management, integrating with sort gates, doing better integrations. We integrate with all the herd management softwares that I'm aware of now in some way or another, but just making that better, more of our information being able to push automatically into your herd management software. And then there's just some little things like when you put a vaccination in, say Dairy Comp, can we pull that down and mute that temperature alert?
Yeah.
Cause you do get a temperature alert for most vaccinations, and that can be just continually working on some of those challenges. And then the one thing that's been out there, I mean, how we originated was that pH bolus. In the U.S., we just hired Dr. Louisa Cook, and she's coming on from the nutrition side. She's really going to focus on using that pH bolus, both on full setup customers, but even customers that work with one of our competitors, if they want to run 10 or 20 pH boluses, either for a one or two time TMR audit on steroids. So if you wanted to do a TMR audit and you wanted to run those pH boluses through your dry cows, through your pre-fresh, through your post-fresh to your high group and see what's going on, see what feed management changes you can make. If a nutritionist wants to look at a particular ingredient, or if a nutritionist just wants to look at, hey, what are we doing? Is there anything we can do to tweak these diets to really dial in either pH levels or pH amplitude? We have that ability. And now with Luisa, we have that resource available to really help the farm and the nutritionist to dial in some of the pH. So taking on farm diets to the next level, that really could be, I think, can be a lot of fun. And we're dabbling with that now and learning, and just some of the little things. Like on a dry cow diet, I could see every day that high pH, what time they're getting fed. And you can,
oh yeah, for sure.
And then, you know, can we go back with another group of boluses, maybe push feed up a little more? Or can we look at going to twice a day feeding? We discovered one the other day on a customer that's using some pH boluses. The heifers are in the regular dry cow group, and those heifers, they know have some edema issues. They've had some edema issues. Well, what we're finding looking at the cows versus the heifers on pH, those heifers probably just aren't getting very good intake. And or just getting what's left over at the end of the day. I think they're going to go ahead and pull a group of heifers and put them in another pen to see if we feed those those pre-fresh heifers separately, can we get intakes up and maybe with that clean up some of their edema issues. So some really cool things on the pH side. Yeah. But just to be completely clear, the pH, this is always confusing. The pH is a separate bolus. So when we're talking about rumination activity and temperature, that's our classic bolus. The pH bolus can be used as a single solution, but you've got the pH for 150 days, but that bolus also does the rumination activity and temperature. So obviously a little more cost on that sensor. That's why it's not going into everybody. And it is all the pH portion. The rest of the bolus is good the lifetime of the cow, but the pH bolus is good. The pH sensor is good for 150 days before that rumen film really builds up on it. And we feel like that's the timeline we think we've got for good, accurate pH data.
Hard to recalibrate inside the cow.
Yeah. If you could take it back out, we could recalibrate, but they're a little bit tough to get out.
Very cool. Okay. Well, I got an off the wall question for you. So I didn't realize before that you worked in real estate for 10 years, and we like to ask people sometimes, you know, you had that experience of working people from all walks of life, I assume. If you could go back and talk to some of those previous real estate customers and sort of explain to them one thing about the dairy sector that they maybe don't get, what would that be?
The biggest thing is the care and the attitude overall toward cows, toward the land. Producers and owners, they want their families live there. They want the best. And then I think the other thing that I think, you know, so often large farm gets labeled as bad. You know, I think we've all been on farms that do really well management that are 50 cows and really well with management that are 5,000 cows. And we've been on farms that the management's not so good on 50 cows and on 5,000 cows. So that over time, obviously the lower hanging fruit on management has gone away because you haven't been able to survive in the market that we're in. But when I am sharing with the general public, I do as much as I can, the care and the effort that goes into taking care of cows. And people are just blown away that the producer will spend money to monitor each cow individually, whether it's us or with a competitor. You know, the idea that cows have a Fitbit or a smartwatch, you know, or even jumping ahead of what's available to humans, have an internal device that's monitoring temperature constantly. I think it's pretty easy to prove the care that farms and dairy producers are putting into their animals and to their land. And that's the message I try to communicate even now when I'm interacting with the general public.
And in the role you're in, I think that's it's a compelling story and one that you can directly speak to, right?
Yeah. And I can put a bolus in their hand, and that's interesting to them too. So,
yep.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Our Yeast 40 Ruminal and Intestinal Double Modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Your partner for extra animal performance, Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition. AgriTrack, leading traction solutions for herd health. Contact us today to boost safety, comfort, and savings for your herd. Invest in the best. Who would your cows choose? Modern solutions for modern cows with AHV. Contact us to beat biofilm-related issues in your herd. Typical fresh cow incidence of clinical hypocalcemia is 3 to 6%, while subclinical hypocalcemia affects 50% or more mature cows. Based on cutting-edge research, Exelite offers a new approach that is build-effective and the ZDUs. For more information, visit www.protecta.com.
All right, time for the three questions that everybody has to handle. So first of all, what's your favorite dairy-related book or resource that you turn to?
So resource-wise, it's the people in dairy for me. There's nothing better, whether it's with somebody like you, whether it's a producer. My favorite thing is to sit and just ask questions. What are you doing? What do you like? What are you seeing? What are the stories? My favorite first question when I'm on a farm, you know, is, hey, tell me the history of the dairy. And so many of these producers have been there their entire life. And if they weren't on that farm their entire life, there's a story. Some of the best ones are those first generation dairy producers, but that story, and they just, it's a lot of fun because you take a rough, gruff, old farmer, you know, sometime a first generation American, and you just watch them melt away. When they tell that story and tell the story of raising their kids on the dairy and spending their life on the dairy, that's the people. And then it's been fun with LinkedIn to be able to see the people that work within the dairy industry. You know, that tends to be more industry professionals, but to see all the stories and all the resources that get shared, I'm not going to be one who's going to sit down and read a 20 or 30 page research paper very often. I'll skim through it, but to see those articles and those things shared on a regular basis, lots of volume, not very much depth is my reading on the dairy side. So it's great. It's great learning from the
people. Well, yeah, when you have to be broad and connect things, right? You can't invest too many hours in one thing, but I agree. It's useful. Excellent. What about your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
So my favorite book, Moneyball, about the Oakland A's and Billy Beane, which kind of fits because I really love digging into the KPIs on dairies. But I really like, some of it is because those numbers that they focus on are just so simple and they were ignored for so long. And the concept of using the data to figure out what's the best way to put together a baseball team. And I think it's very similar to what we're doing every single day on a dairy farm. What's the best data we can use to put together a really good herd? And I think there's probably some moral in that story. Like we love going really deep in the data, but sometimes there's some simple stuff that we maybe step over to chase something that's a little bit too cool. And I can be guilty of that as well.
I know what you mean. Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, I was a huge baseball fan, and then I kind of just drifted away, went to a MLB game maybe 7 or 8 years ago. And like for some of the batters, there was literally nobody on the left side of the field and I was like, wow, this Moneyball thing is real. It was just shocking how much it had changed. Yeah. Crazy. Okay. Lastly, in your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
I think just the attention to detail and the ability to work with, be really good with people. Right now, you know, the farms that have employees, whether it's a small number of employees or a large number of employees, they've got attention to detail when it comes to the cows, but they on a regular basis on a really well-managed dairy, you're seeing people that have been there 15, 20, 25, 30 years. They obviously care about their people. They figure out how to take care of them. And we all know, I think we all know that pay is not the going to be the number one thing to keep people there. You do have to be competitive, but they want to feel like they're valued. They want to feel like they're taken care of. They want to feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves. And that's, I feel like the dairies that are really making it, that's one of the things I see on a regular basis is the people that have been there a long time.
Well, Brian, as always, I've enjoyed the conversation. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. It's been awesome.
Again, our guest today has been Brian Sanford from Smex Tech. And this has been another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show brought to you by Wisenetics. If you haven't followed or liked the show yet, make sure you hit the button so you don't miss the next episode. And we'll see you then.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.